podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey everybody, welcome to Coach Unplugged. So excited you decided to join us today. Before we jump in, we want to give a big shout out to our sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dish, the number one shooting machine on the market. I think I've gotten it down to about 18 seconds. I can take that thing down. It's unbelievable. We got the new one, still playing with it. It's unbelievable. I love the little clip on to your shirt that you can kind of run the machine from. It's awesome. My son loves that one. Mention Coach Unplugged, they'll give you $350 off. Also, go over and check out ttubes.com for coaches who want to get better. If you're sick of Zoom calls, if you're sick of, you know, diving everywhere and looking for what you need, our roadmap will help you become a better basketball coach. There's lots of great resources out there, but a lot of them are run by people that are college coaches or aren't teaching stats all day and then jump into the gym and have to deal with the everyday things 24/7 that a high school coach or a youth coach has to deal with. So come over, let me help you become a better basketball coach, ttubes.com. Let's head off to the podcast.
Three seemed to be the perfect number after we crunched it a little bit.
Okay.
And it's hard to do as a coach sometimes, but I've got someone tracking it. I have someone on my bench track possessions, all our possessions. And sometimes I'll go, man, the offense isn't working. We need to change. He goes, stop. They haven't scored six straight times on this court, Steve. My sense was that maybe we weren't scoring. Sometimes your intuition fights the actual math behind it.
Yeah.
So I had somebody start tracking it, and it seemed like three times, and then they seemed to have a rhythm. And three tended to get to be five or six rather than three, and we changed it. You know, all of a sudden we're playing man, and then we go to a 1-3-1. That little bit of, oh, what are they doing? Where we got to move people? Just enough to get them out of rhythm seemed to work. So you should go watch back. That's a good assistant coach job. Go back and watch some film and tell me, see if that plays true. It might be more or less at the collegiate level. I don't know.
Hey, and speaking of that, Steve, and this wasn't going to be one of my topics, but I have the greatest assistant in the land. Now, like I said, his name is Sean Severson. He's a Wisconsin guy, and he's been with me for 16 years. And so, we think alike, but he has enough freedom to disagree. And so, he's the associate head coach. I wouldn't even say he's assistant. He's like a co-head coach.
Right.
And I'm really blessed because I know that there's a lot of turnover, especially in the Division III ranks with assistants, but.
Right. The thing is,
he's going to take over
for me. I've had two staffs in 30 years, basically two staffs.
Wow. Okay.
That's why we're a machine because, you know, we all they all kind of do their piece. We all know our piece in the puzzle. That's the key. It's like sometimes it's like.
And that's unheard of.
It's unheard of.
Yeah.
It's unheard of. Because people are always it's a shiny object thing. People are looking for the next thing. So what was the second thing you wanted to talk about?
I was going to talk a little bit about
subjective mistakes.
The mindset of coaching. Yeah, mistakes. And especially now, and again, I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, but when I took over at Grove City, I was taking over for a legend. And my own head coach, a guy who had been there 28 years and had good success. And in my first year taking over as the head coach, I was innocent. I mean, and my assistant and I, we worked our tail off. We just coached them as hard as we could and never even considered winning and losing. It didn't matter. It didn't matter. Right. And by the way, I got that philosophy from John Barr, who got it from John Wooden. It was, hey, it's the process. Don't worry about the wins. Just, you know, do your best, you know, have high standards.
Yes.
Well, when we won the league that year, my first year, you know, it was obviously very exciting, but something clicked in my mind after that. And the second year that I was the head coach, I had this self-imposed pressure and pressure from the administration that wasn't even there. It was all self-imposed pressure. And as we started to struggle a little bit, I became mean. I would never say this to my players, but it was as if I'm this stressed and miserable, you guys are going to be just as stressed and miserable as me.
Right.
And my whole identity was winning. My whole self-worth was about winning. And it was like that for 4 years.
But that's I'm going to be devil's advocate here. That's a young coach's issue, I think.
Oh yeah.
I have an older brother. I had an older brother and I, the first time we went to the state finals, we lost and I was miserable. And then we won it the next year. And then we didn't win it for 3 or 4 more years. I call him, I go, oh, we're not, he goes, stop. If you're only happy when you win, you're never going to be happy, Steve. Like, do the best you can.
Yeah.
The wins will take care of themselves. But if you're only happy when you win the very last game of the season, you're going to be miserable most of the time.
Yeah. You know? And Steve, I was taking that misery out on the players.
Yeah, I know you do.
I can remember this as if it were yesterday. One of the toughest players that I ever coached, his name is Tanner Prosser. He's now a successful high school coach here in Pennsylvania. One of the leading rebounders of all time in college history. I'm watching film after a loss in the team room by myself. I see that Tanner Prosser, he didn't block out one time. So I call him on the phone. Okay, he's in his dorm room. I said, you need to come to the team room right now. I sit him down. I say, look. And I replay that possession about 4 times. Look, you didn't box out. You didn't box out. And he turns to me and he goes like this. He goes, Coach, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I noticed right then, that was when it was revealed to me. Like, I didn't even know I was doing this until that moment. And that was the beginning of me climbing out of that hellhole.
And to be honest with you, that might have been some faith-based things there. Like, he was probably worried about you as a human. How can I help you? Yeah.
Now, and it didn't come like right away, but over the next couple of years, I got back to trying to be me.
Right.
And learn. I imbibed the philosophy of I never had a bad coach in my life, Steve. I mean, from my 8th grade years all the way through high school, college.
You're very lucky.
I am. And they all basically preached the same thing, which was, you know, we're going to play to a standard and let the results take care of themselves. And I got back to that. It's almost as if, you know, everything's fine. And then suddenly you become involved in drugs or alcohol. And now you got to climb out, you know, using AA or some other, you know, and then you're back to who you are again. And that's what I went through.
Right.
But I remember apologizing to the kids on those early teams, like, guys, I wish you could play for me now. I wish you could.
I don't know if I've publicly apologized to my 04 team, which is my first state tournament team. Best team I've ever coached. Best team I've ever coached. We won it the following year with Wesley, who we were talking about, who plays for the Bucks. And and he would argue that was the best team, but he was on the previous team too. Uh-huh. And part of that is, like, I wasn't the coach and the person and the teacher I needed to be. And I feel so, as coaches, you just carry that around. It's like, oh, if only I'd have known that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm so, and he comes to practices now and he goes, Coach, you're so calm. I go, Wesley, I don't know if it's age or it's like, but it's also in perspective. You know, it's like, you know, you played in high school?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So part of that is that it's that shift of leaving player and to become coach, that competitive.
That's a great point.
Yeah. I think that's a really hard thing, I think, for people to do.
When you mentioned that you had players come back and say, Coach, well, are you getting older? Are you mellowing? I've had that time and time again. And I say, no, guys. This is how I should have coached you back in the early 2000s.
Yes.
Because
it's also reading your audience, which I've taught for 30 years. Okay. How I coached 30 years ago would not work now. Wouldn't work.
Hey, Steve, how were you coached in? Are you from Wisconsin?
I am. Okay. I had a great high school coach. Okay. He actually got me, I think was part of the reason I'm coaching today is like,
yeah,
he gave me a love of that game. I remember going watching those games when I was a kid, my parents taking me to those games. And then I played collegiately at Lawrence, which is in Appleton. I don't know if you know where Lawrence is. And then I started coaching right away. So, you know, okay. I went from playing to coaching in a snap. It never stopped. So that player part, I was ready to be done playing, but that competitiveness isn't, I mean, shoot, we just played a game of Clue as a family about an hour
ago. You've never had a Christmas off in your adult life, have you?
I have. Now, that is where I have. I have a senior and a freshman. When my kids were little, I gave, and this is one of my secret sauces, I think, at the high school level. I gave them time off. I went to Florida with my parents. I mean, I'd say, this week, you're off. I'm because my kids were little. I wasn't going to – I was already doing 80 million things and coaching all year. I said, I'm taking some time off to spend it with my kids at the beach, blah, blah, blah. So I was always, you know, I'm always doing something. We're always playing and stuff. But I always gave – there's always a chunk over winter break that I took for family.
That's a great idea to keep
it
yourself.
It was for young. I mean, and it was not easy. Trust me. And there's still times like, oh, did that hurt it? But it was better for me and my family and the kids, and because they already lost part of their dad anyway. Because I was, you know, on a Tuesday in February, I was at a scouting, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I thought that was important. But no, officially, no, no. But I'm telling you, this quarantine. You know, I'm in my mid-50s, getting close to my mid-50s, and I'm, you know, I'm not going to, but it's like, this has proven to me that I'm not ready to retire.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, retirement isn't quarantine, but I'm not ready to be home. I'm missing my kids. I'm missing my class, missing my players. You know, Snapchatting and doing all that stuff with them isn't the same.
I just had a meeting with my players prior to getting on with you. We're allowed to meet with them during this time.
Okay.
But it's a Teams meeting or a Zoom meeting.
Right.
Before hanging up, I said, guys, I miss you. And I do. I'm going kind of through withdrawal.
I know.
Because they're not coming into the office.
Right. I've said this on a ton of podcasts, but I have food in my room all the time. Like, that's the reason they come. High school boys will eat, come, they will follow food no matter
what. That's a good idea.
They always come in, and it's like I sent them a video a couple of days ago. I said, "Man, you guys are saving me a lot of money because, you know, I'm not making my Costco run to get apples and granola bars and all that stuff."
Yeah,
so you're saving me money. I appreciate that, but I do miss you. You know, because I had to bring all that food home because I couldn't leave it at school because I didn't know when we were coming back. But
yeah,
I know. I think being vulnerable as a coach. I think this is a side note on what we're talking about here, but. I call myself a porch dog, you know, the porch dog that lays in the porch near the, you know, not the dog running around the house, but like a puppy, but a porch dog. And I think you, you put everything kind of in perspective as you get a little bit older, like coaching wise, like it will be okay. And, you know, if I don't watch another hour of film, it will be okay. And, you know, I think that's a good perspective that what you're talking about here, that for the coaches, it's like, you got to get away too. You can't, like, the only reason I'm still coaching is because I've been good about compartmentalizing. And, you know, if you do this full throttle for, you can't do it for 30 years if you're going to do that, or you're going to burn out, or you're going to lose something. You might lose your wife, but who knows? You're going to lose something.
I'm fortunate in that my wife is a coach.
Oh, yeah.
She's the women's soccer coach at Grove City College.
So that helps.
That helps.
Yeah.
But do you think nowadays, there's more turnover in coaching at the high school level than there was when, because we're about contemporary age.
Yeah.
Than when we were playing.
I think there's a demand to be the head coach.
Okay.
I don't think there's a demand to be a freshman coach like there was when I was coming out. I think the pressure's more. I think the turnover is more. I don't know. Observational study here for my stats students. If you're listening, there's no statistical basis to this, but I mean, I would make more working at the gas station than I do coaching. I mean, I don't do it to make money.
Right.
I mean, this is community service basically. So I think part of it is a financial part for the turnover. I think there's a shortage of teachers. So I think more coaches are becoming non-teachers, which I personally don't think is necessarily a good thing. Mm-hmm. And there's great coaches that aren't teachers. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But when you and I were coming up, you became a high school coach. You became a high school teacher. You know, that was I would miss that interaction. So I mm-hmm. think there's going to be a shortage of teachers. But that's why I think that's, there's a little bit of an effect. I don't think football back. I think the big boys are not the hard ones to fill as much because mm-hmm. there's some quote unquote glory in it. But the demand is definitely, especially at the lower levels, it's definitely harder to find coaches than it was 20 years ago at the lower levels.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. You know? And I know the local high schools around here are having trouble filling those positions.
It's like officials. Like, so I don't yell as officials like I do and used to, you know, because we're not going to have enough officials in 20 years mm-hmm. either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how many times have you argued a call where the official says, you know what? Steve, you're right. I'm going to change that call.
Never. But the only, but you know what? If an official walks, so here's my thing. If an official walks by me and goes, Steve, I missed it. Boom, we're done. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the ones that don't talk to me are the ones that irritate me. Just communicate with me.
I agree. The ones that apologize disarm me right away.
Oh, right. I don't, why don't more of them do that? Like, Steve, I missed that. I was out of position. Steve, I didn't see that. But my other guy, I'll talk to him at a dead ball. We're done. That's all I want. I just want you to converse with me and let me know what you – oh, Steve, you know, he had his hand on his hip. I had to call it. It's a third time down. Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
We're done talking. I can go yell. Yeah. I can go deal with my guys now. That's what – I mean, But that's a veteran official again. The other one.
Yes.
You know, the young ones tend to be a little bit more. Give me a window of your season. What's your window of your season? Like, when do you start, when do you end?
We start – officially October 15th, which is the first day that Division III schools are admitted to practice.
Okay, I can never remember that. Okay.
Yeah. And we go through, it's the NCAA gives us 19 weeks to work with our players. And so we go to the end of February, and we usually take 2 weeks off during Christmas. That includes the time for final exams and then Christmas break. Okay. And then literally in between Christmas and New Year's, we'll come back and start to practice and maybe have a Christmas tournament and then we're right back into it.
And is an automatic bid for conference champion or automatic bid for tournament champion? Or
Work? Tournament champion gets the automatic bid.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And has your league been lucky enough to have more than one?
Never. We have to win it. To go. There's no other way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That makes it a lot harder.
Oh, yeah. There's the pressure.
So you're similar to a mid-major, low-major D1. Like, you got to win it or you don't get to go.
There's only one hope, and that's, you know, a 5-6-day tournament at the end of February.
And does everybody make the tournament?
We just went to 10 teams. This past year, we had 9, so we're just adding one. So it was an 18 tournament. Number 9 did not go.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So next year, 10 will go. People will get buys then.
Yeah, yes.
That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. How do you practice plan? This has been my talk for the last couple of weeks about practice planning. Okay. How do you do that? When do you do that?
Yeah. You know, I'm a teacher. Okay. That's what I'm trained to do. And interestingly, the first basketball clinic that I went to was actually before I even had a coaching job. The speaker talked about how to write a practice plan. And as I was taking notes, I thought, this is no different than a lesson plan. And so everything's written out. But basically, I have a master plan for the year. And then I'll have a weekly plan that.
How far do you deviate from your master plan?
Sometimes at the halfway mark, I'm riding by the seat of my pants.
Right, I know, I hear you.
The weekly plan is where it's like the skeleton, and then I put the flesh on the bones or the muscles with daily plans, and everything's down to the minute. And we only go 2 hours, so we have to be pretty concise and intense. And
when do you always practice the same time at your level or?
No, at least early in the season when the women's volleyball team and the women's basketball team and the men's basketball team are all playing, we have to adjust based on those two other teams. And when women's volleyball is over, it's the men and women's basketball team that will share
okay.
time. So it's usually 4 to 6 and then 6 to 8.
Okay.
And then we split it 50-50, who goes early, who goes late.
Okay. Yeah, we do that too with ours. We always have a rule that if you play the next day, you're early.
Okay.
That just, you know, I don't want to be practicing at 8 and then have a game the next day. So that right. seems to be a great rule for us. Do you ever have problems with guys taking classes?
No, because all of the we'll practice around their class times.
Okay.
And more often than not, the classes are done by 4.
Okay.
Every once in a while, there'll be a lab that they have to go to that's until 5. And so if we have the early slot, they may miss a half an hour.
Right.
But fortunately, very little practice time is missed because we always practice in the evening.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So how would you describe your coaching philosophy?
You know, I think I got it from, well, I'm a product of every coach that invested in me.
I think we are. SSC. We all are. I tell people this all the time. I'm a little piece of everyone I've coached under. Like I'm a little bit. I took a little bit of each of them that I thought was what I thought I could use with my personality. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, and interesting. I'll just as an aside. This year, at the beginning of the season, I had our captains set the goals. Actually, the whole team. And the goal prior to the season for them was, we're going to win this thing. We're going to win the league championship and go to the NCAAs.
Okay.
Okay, okay, that's what your goal is. Well, we started off 0-4. 0-4. And at that point, we had a team meeting. And I said, fellas, I want to apologize for not stepping in and not allowing you to have that goal. Because it goes against everything that I've ever taught you up to this point. Everything that I was taught as a coach, and that is, we're process driven. We're not results driven. We're process driven.
Right.
So let's back up. Let's remember what our mission is. It's all about the process. Every day we're just going to get better. We're going to play to a standard. We're going to play to a standard in a culture of love and accountability.
Right.
That's it. So we took the pressure off of them, and we actually won 21 games this year and went to the NCAAs. But
okay,
did you
get to play your game?
Yes, we did. We played 2.
Okay,
we won our first round game and then lost our second round game. Okay. And then 4 days later, they canceled the tournament.
Oh, I know. It's so bad.
Yeah.
So if you'd have won the second one, then you'd have been practicing.
We've been canceled.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a little bit of a blessing. You got at least closure, like in your season.
I agree, Steve. We finished better than any school or any former Grove City team, and so there was history made, and then there was closure.
Right, there's closure. And, that's a good thing. So what would I see if, let's say, I came to your practice and I just sat up in the corner for an hour? What would I see?
I hope you would see organization and great teaching. Like, if you're a teacher, you'll say, okay, hey, look, there's a lesson plan. Everything's delineated into there. These are offensive parts, defensive parts, skill work, shooting. I hope you would see that as we break up, I'm not even looking at what my assistant's doing because I trust him, completely
right.
trust him.
Right.
And then we're doing our breakdown drills. I think you'd see that during certain aspects of the practice, my two assistants are doing the coaching, and then I'll call a player over and just whisper in his ear. Like, I want to get a contact with every player during the practice. And it's just a one-on-one. And, right. and maybe, hey, look, I'm noticing how well you're blocking out. I love you for it. You just keep it up. Or maybe, look, you haven't spoken up at all today. I mean, you're not right. talking on defense. So what's going on? Right. Do I need to know something?
Right.
Something like that.
I love that. What do you think that, what do you think the hardest thing to teach is? I picked my words carefully there. I didn't say coach. I said teach.
Teach. I think the nuances of our defense, because we switch everything and it's so much different than what they're used to in high school that we have to reprogram.
Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you love it and you want to support us, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. 14-day free trial as we talk. Subscribe, like, jump up and down. Do whatever you got to do. Those Apple podcasts mean a lot to us. I read every one of them. Have a great day.
Sports Social Podcast Network.